This is Ramsey Radio, the farming and farm machinery podcast from Ramsey Brothers, partnering farmers since 1950.
Hello and welcome to Ramsey Radio, the Ramsey Brothers podcast for farmers. I'm your host, Tim Glover, and for this episode, my special guest is the CEO of Innovative Commodities Handler, T-Ports, a busy man, Kieran Carville. Welcome to Ramsey Radio.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Tim. Pleasure to be here.
I guess to set the scene, let's start with a picture of what is T-Ports and whereabouts do you operate?
What is T-Ports? We're a port development and operational company. That is, we operate the infrastructure that we build. Where do we come from originally? There was a crazy and brilliant Scotsman who came up with an efficient transshipment system. Who on the back of a cigarette box calculation, he decided that he was going to dig a hole in Lucky Bay in South Australia. Now, fortune favours the brave most of the time. While he was starting to dig the hole to put iron ore out through a transshipment basis, the iron ore market crashed and he realised that he was going to need something else to make the port work. Realised I had a grains background and asked me if grains wouldn't work. We spent a number of years trying to take it from that original, this is going to work, sort of very small calculation to making it turning it into an investable project. We're based at the moment South Australia, Lucky Bay on the Eyre Peninsula. Wallaroo is now in build on the York Peninsula. Will be a similar operation. We've got upland storage sites in Kimba, in Lock. We've got a big storage site in Lucky Bay itself. Once Wallaroo is built, we'll have one just outside of Wallaroo as well. A South Australian company, we're based in Adelaide. During this part of the season, we've probably got about 140, 150 people on the books. And, you know, this is now our third season. I'd call it our second full season. The first one, we didn't have the port built yet. Third season now, ADM, we're the only supporter at start from the trade side. So we're massively appreciative for the support that they've given us because, again, without them, we wouldn't have existed. But now we've got an array of the trade who are pricing into the sites, whether it's AWB, ADM, naturally, still Dreyfus, who came on last year, AGE, who are the biggest local exporter, based also over in Adelaide. And then we got Flexi Grain, who are putting up they call it a collaborative export program. It's a sort of a pools program with an export outlet. It's changed quite dramatically over the last couple of years. The challenge still remains to be able to give a good service on both sides, both to the grower and to the trade. And that is a daily challenge. We got to listen every day to what comes in from the growers to, you know, where mistakes have been made, where things are not running as quickly as they want them to, what segs, etc. We got to run. And this year in particular, segs are, they're a very, very interesting story. But coming back to your initial question, where do we come from? Well, we came out and we went and we put up an idea to growers is that we'd give them shares in the company if they signed up an expression of interest where they showed what sort of tons they would potentially deliver if the facility was built. And I remember those meetings at first, we either got zero or one or three people arrived to the meetings, most being highly critical or cynical, I think would be even better. To where we are today, where T-Ports is a name that people like because it's brought a very significant change, not through T-Ports on its own, but through the change in the competitive environment. So it's challenged the incumbent to change the way they think as well. And pricing has gone from being $10 under Adelaide to being a premium to it on the EP within the catchment area. So that's a good result.
Absolutely. And it's a massive undertaking and the transformational change. Just give us some stats and some numbers on the actual build. I mean, there's a massive amount of earth moved and, you know, infrastructure put in place. Give us a quick rundown on how you saw that happening.
I think thankfully in life, we all often don't realise how big a challenge is when we take it on. Before we even go to have a look at the land side, we've got a vessel sitting out the front, the Lucky Air, which is a state-of-the-art piece of equipment. Nobody has put bucket elevators containers onto a vessel before or put a gantry-mounted scraper. These are all things that drive the efficiency within the vessel. But she's an 87-metre vessel. She can handle about 12,000 tonnes a day when the dredge hole is big enough. And sitting behind her, we've got two silos on the port side, full set of material handling systems, drive-over hopper, truck intake, which is capable of doing about 1,200 tonnes an hour at the port. The actual Lucky Bay site itself in total is about 370 hectares. The bunker site is capable of taking about 360,000 tonnes of grain. If you ask me about how much earth was moved, I don't honestly remember.
Let's delve a little bit deeper into the transshipment part of the business.
Well, I think to take a step back and talk about what the concept is and why it works, because we hear so many spurious things out there that have been said about us by people who are armchair experts and know nothing about what we do. So you've got two types of transshipment. One is inefficient transshipment. That's where they put stuff into a vessel. They got to warp it up and down the wharf to try and load it. It's on with pulled by tugs. It's in, you know, these dead barges. They bring them out to an ocean-going vessel. It takes them a couple of hours to line themselves up and get themselves ready out there, and then they grab discharge it into the ocean-going vessel. It's not an environmentally clean. It's sloppy. It's slow. And then you've got efficient transshipment technology where, you know, the transshipment vessel, when she comes in, there's automated mooring hooks on her. So she comes in the same position all the time. The grain is fed into her from the silos, and she's like a floating export silo. If you want to have a look at in a normal grain export infrastructure setup, such as Port Lincoln, the grain goes into the site in Port Lincoln, but will get transferred to the export silo before it then gets loaded from the export silo out over the Green Dragon. If we take transshipment vessel, she fills as a gantry scraper. That means that it starts moving the grain up and down the transshipment vessel, which means we've got no need for ballast in it, which gives us an extra 15 years of longevity. The vessel leaves the wharf, and she's trimmed already when she leaves the wharf. She goes out to the ocean-going vessels, which are parked offshore at about 5 nautical miles. She comes alongside, she moors, takes her about 15 to 20 minutes to moor alongside, and starts discharging into the ocean-going vessel, again using the gantry-mounted scraper to feed two hoppers at the front of the vessel, feeding two bucket elevators, which feed the boom arm, and it loads into an ocean-going vessel. The transshipment part of it, and it's subject to how many tons go through, is anywhere between $2 and $6. Transshipment, in this case, we're working probably the same sort of supply chain, the same amount of moves within the supply chain as you would have in a standard grains operation, just the export silo floats. If we have a look at the sites that we've built, except for Kimber, which is naturally, we put her up on an interim basis this year and will improve as we go along, but the sites are built so that trucks can get in, get sampled with automated sampling probes, get through the site with a minimum turnaround time. They're based off triples. You know, a lot of the older sites were built at a time where you had singles with a dog on the back, etc. And they don't have the site engineering to get trucks through quickly.
So, important question, obviously, to majority of our listeners is, how do you think the T-Ports model will benefit grain growers? And what's T-Ports doing to make sure the growers actually receive the benefits?
The T-Ports model is not better for everything. What the T-Ports model does is it allows you to build infrastructure close to where the product is. Because if you've only got 10 to 20% of the cost of normal deep water infrastructure, you only need 10 to 20% of the throughput. You know, do we intend to try and take over Port Lincoln? Of course we don't. T-Ports is about putting in regional specialized ports into areas where goods should actually be coming out, rather than having an extra $15, $16, $20 truck freight. You're operating a model that's at the same OPEX with the low CAPEX. And what we're doing on a pricing basis, making sure that the pricing that we're giving through to the trade is low enough for them to hand on those pricing differences through to the growers, plus also bringing competition into the area. So just through our existence and introducing competition, It has changed, we think, by $20, $30 a ton, what's going into the grower's pocket.
Grain quality has become a major issue this season. Obviously, there's been a lot of strangeness, if you like, for lack of a better word, obviously at the hands of Mother Nature and thanks to the weather. How does T-Ports manage grain quality at sites? And any advice you can throw out to the growers?
How do we manage quality at sites? Carefully. I think that's the...
Importantly and carefully.
Yeah, we like the growers. We watched those rains coming in, and we were testing everything after each rain. And you know, the last one, if we hadn't had it, we'd be a bit more fortunate. But the last rains, they did the damage. So you've got a very big spread. It's not so much on screenings or test weight. They all seem to be fine. You've got a no major problems. It's the big problems that you have are with sprouted falling number and the protein being a little bit lower this year, which is I think natural. If you got a bit less heat and a bit less sun, then your proteins tend to be a little bit lower. The big issue is falling number, and those falling numbers stretch anywhere from 70 to 400. So you've got a huge amount of qualities in between. So what we're trying to do all the time is figure out what are the qualities and the grades that the growers have, what's coming in, relaying that back to the trade and asking the trade, what are they going to buy? So that, there's no point in us making a stack of AGP or ASW or whatever that tends to be, or SFW, which is the feed wheat, unless the trade are going to buy it.
Absolutely. Plenty still to talk about, and one of the big things I want to touch on after the break is where T-Ports sees itself going forward. First, we need to take a short break. We'll be back with Kieran Carville in just a minute. Don't go anywhere.
Bednar Terraland TO, the name to remember for soil renovation. Exclusively available through Ramsey Brothers, why settle for a machine that works on one dimension? Do more in one pass. Increase oxygen supply and remove hard pans. Mix and combine topsoil for better structure and nutrient availability. Increase root growth and microbial activity and improve moisture retention. Bednar Terraland TO, it's a ripper. Call Ramsey Brothers for more. Ramsey Brothers, partnering farmers since 1950.
Welcome back to Ramsey Radio. We're talking to T-Port CEO Kieran Carville about innovation in the South Australian grain export sector. Kieran, we covered off plenty of information and obviously topical, but very, very informative before the break. Interested to know the initial stages once the build phase started. Did it all go smoothly?
Did it all go smoothly? No way. we can start off with the vessel itself, which was an odyssey. We had the initial build phase in a yard in Nansha, which is near Hong Kong. When we were all set to come out of Nansha, the authorities decided that we couldn't sail up to Shanghai because they wanted us to be pulled by tugboats up there. So we had arguments with them for a while, and eventually we had to follow them, and we had to order tugboats to get ready with a boat that was, the build was finished, just material handling systems, etc., were not yet built into the vessel. It turned into the new year, and China decided that all vessels were going to be categorized as dredges. And dredges were politically sensitive because you might go out and build something in the South China Sea that they didn't want you to. I don't know what their reason for it was. So we ended up having the vessel impounded, and we were trying to get it up to Shanghai. While she was impounded, the heaviest storm or cyclone to go through, hurricane, I think they call it up there, to go through Hong Kong, went through Hong Kong. When we eventually managed to get out, we came out into stormy seas. I think we took shelter in every cove on the way between Hong Kong and Shanghai. You know, we got to Shanghai, tied her up, and there was never a hurricane that made landfall in Shanghai before. Hurricane made landfall when we were going to leave Shanghai with the vessel to head down to Lucky Bay. Somebody on the wharf, one of the staff in the yard, got caught up on the rope, and the captain had to take a decision to crash the vessel or kill the man. So he crashed the vessel. You know, a couple of days later, we got lucky. It was just Chinese New Year, just beforehand. We managed to convince Lloyd's that the vessel was okay, and we got out of the yard in Shanghai and started coming back down to Australia. I think it was a couple of days after that that people realised that COVID was on the way, and we got out just in time. Lucky Bay itself, you know, we already had a dredging licence, but getting the approval to use it took years longer than we would have liked it to be. So, you know, when that vessel was arriving down from China, we had to park it up in Waiala at first because we'd only been let off the leash by the EPA a couple of weeks beforehand, so it never goes quite the way you want it to. With regards to the site build, in general, rather unexciting because we have a construction manager who does his job extremely well. So other than there being a couple of delays that you run into, site builds were fairly okay.
Wow, that's plenty to comprehend in terms of the story. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, MV Lucky Air is the name of the transhipper.
MV Lucky Air is the name of the transhipper. That's what I'm saying. A couple of hurricanes and a crash before you even leave China. People go, well, why would you call her lucky? Well, nothing happened to her.
It's always interesting to hear those stories because at the end of the day, you know, within reason, we sit here and have a look at everything up and running, and it's all unicorns and rainbows to a certain extent. But there's genuinely, with something like this, plenty that's happened behind the scenes. So really, really interesting to hear that and some of the challenges that you've had to get through. You've alluded during our conversation to obviously Wallaroo is underway, but any other plans beyond Wallaroo?
Yes, we have been working for the last 2 years on an export opportunity out of Kingscote, down in Kangaroo Island, to take the wood chip out of there. We think that we're getting fairly close to getting into a position where we'll be able to say it's going ahead. It would give a very good solution to a problem that we are not aware of any other palpable or economically efficient solutions that are available at the moment. So the government, the island, everybody I think knows in the meantime what we're trying to do. And I think we've got very good chances of getting it over the line, but we're not 100% sure yet. There is also a couple of other projects that we're involved in, which are based on minerals. One of them in particular is looking quite advanced. There's probably about five other projects that we're working on within and outside of South Australia that have, I would think, good chances of going ahead. But until they're locked and loaded, we just try and keep our heads down and keep concentrating on getting the job done, and then coming out and talking to the public. There was one in particular where we've signed up initial agreements, which is for the import of fertilizer into Lucky Bay and into Wallaroo, using the same vessel but not the same material handling system, so that we keep away from contamination issues, etc., which would then open up the possibility to people in the area to deliver in their pulses, their lentils, and we'd be able to then either transship them out to an ocean-going vessel or bring them down to Adelaide. But it allows growers then coming into site with product and pick up fertilizer and back to farm, and it saves them partially that trip over the top down to Adelaide and back again, bringing down their pulses and bringing back fertilizer. So it's not a huge project, but it does, I think, add a lot more in attraction to the sites for the growers. So an awful lot going on, not only in Lucky Bay but elsewhere, we're producing some value for you.
The exciting thing about the ag game is there's a lot of evolution. Nothing stays the same for too long. But do you see any major way or major differences in how our growers, and we're talking EP growers at this particular point in time, but do you see any fundamental changes in the way they handle their grain?
I think that we will see a move towards First of all, it's very flexible on farm storage, which is, you know, the silo bag and the CapEx light version of it. You're still not going to get away from growers wanting to deliver a significant portion of the crop into a site during harvest, and for the traders to be able to pay for grain, they need to have it warehoused reliably, know the quality and have access to it. But you will see a move towards putting more grain into a shed and building sheds, etc. I think that's from our side, the only major change that we see in the shorter term.
Mate, really enjoyed getting an understanding of you and the Teaport's business. Has been a really, really exciting episode, and hopefully something that resonates with our listeners, and certainly for the wider ag community, just to give them a bit of an idea of what's happening along the Eyre Peninsula and the whole, at a point in time, the radical idea for the EP of having a transshipment port.
I think the message to get across there, and I think it's the most important message of all of it, is we would not exist today if it wasn't for the growers. So those growers who came out and they signed up expressions of interest, just said, you know, if you think you're going to deliver this amount of tons, please sign up an EOI. That gave us the ability to go to, you know, equity and debt. And so we've got a shareholder base outside of the, call it, professional investors. There's 180 growers who are shareholders within Teaports, and it's a symbiotic relationship. Without the growers, we wouldn't exist, and without us, the growers wouldn't have the same result in their pockets that they have at the moment. So it's something that we as a company will never forget, is where we came from and why we exist, and we exist because there's growers on the EP.
Absolutely. And mate, really appreciate your time, and no doubt we'll catch up soon.
All right. Thank you very much, Tim. Bye now.
As always, Ramsey Radio is made for farmers, and you can find all of our episodes on any leading podcast app. If you like what you heard, goes without saying, please rate, subscribe, and share the program. I'm Tim Glover. I'll catch you on the next Ramsey Radio episode. And in the meantime, stay safe and look after each other.
You've been listening to Ramsey Radio, brought to you by Ramsey Brothers. Find this and all our podcasts on your preferred podcast app or on our website at ramseybros.com.au.